Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredible, vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. That's a great way to start a podcast, isn't it?
We're at 8:26 on Monday night, typically not the time we record this podcast. But life is weird.
Hang with us, listeners. We're going to make it worth your while.
This one's going to really test our chemistry, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really, it's hard, man. It's hard to do this and not be affected by everything going on right now.
So. I was reminded as we were thinking about this, I was reminded of the pod episode we did with Megan McGee.
Right when
COVID popped, or the day after the NBA suspended season. And I think we were talking in the prep of that episode, you know, this idea that, you know, our podcast is fun and breezy. How do you do a fun and breezy podcast about, you know, a growing pandemic? And again, here we are in this moment of trying to make a podcast episode in a rapidly changing world that is not fun nor breezy.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, we're doing this because we're committed to having a conversation about our community and our sector and our city. Oh. And that's what we're going to do today and have that conversation. They can't all be West Tank episodes.
Or Rosie Petrie.
Or Mariah Cracker. We've had some bangers already. And again, please keep it on. Please keep listening. We swear to God, this will get better. But I just wanted, my heart is heavy, man. My heart is heavy. Just, it's, can't fake it. It's hard.
So. Yeah, thanks for leading our staff meeting this morning. Like you had a unenviable task to bring us into our weekly staff meeting to be able to unpack the events of the last week, and then particularly of the last few days.
Just to provide you some context, we do check-ins. We're all working virtually, so we meet via Zoom. I'm sure like those of you who are working from home know that deal. You know, often one of our practices, we want to be centered in arts and culture, right? And so often whoever's hosting that day will lead the meeting with a reflection, perhaps inspired by art. So my inspiration today was bringing in Sam Cooke's 1964 recording of A Change Is Gonna Come for us to hold. And the charge, if you will, the reflection was guided by you know, just by the song and how are people coming in and creating about 15 minutes for people to show up. And I think for those, again, let's talk about a thing that people weren't at. I think our intention is we got to live our values, right? And we have to be real. Yeah, there's a lot of work to do, but how we show up for each other and how we're present for each other matters. And so can we give each other 15 minutes of being present? And I think we did. And I'm trying to be present on this podcast as well, because I know those folks are listening, for a reason, and we're grateful for them, because you are, you're part of the conversation as well. And so I think for me, you know, maybe we played some Sam coming into this bit. It's, what Sam Cooke means to me is he is a voice, a powerful voice, a prophet, a man who, you know, at the time of his death was ready to start his own record company and ready to do his own industry and really be about empowerment and building his own economy, building an own economy for other Black artists and whatnot. And it's an awful parallel, right, to see that. But yet at the same time, I choose to take from Sam Cooke's story of the redemptive power of a gift and what it continues to offer for us. And so yeah, the theme is soothsayers today. We were all called upon to figure out who gives us grace what poet, artist. And so that's definitely the invitation for you at home. If you're thinking along those, who gives you grace? Who makes sense for you when, as David said, outside everything is not making sense. So
yeah, well, I guess let us know with under the hashtag imaginary friend.
Yeah, we want to make you imaginary friend. Yeah, we're up for good ideas, soothsayers.
You know, again, I can't. Thanks again for sharing that, Mac, and sort of bringing our listening audience back into our morning staff meeting. And I just can't help but I don't know if you heard just now, but the emergency alert just went off my telephone about the curfew that's going to come into effect in half an hour. These are not normal times, right? Like I was talking to my wife earlier today, and I was like, you know, we've been rationing food, right? Like you can't buy more than two packages of chicken at the supermarket. Now we have this 9 p.m. curfew. This is, these are extraordinary times. You know, I think, we were talking about it earlier today, right? Like the sort of this real-time sense-making is really it's tiring.
It's tiring.
But, yeah.
But we persist and we go on. And let's be real and frank, right? Like it's been hard for a lot of people for a long time. So maybe for some of us, we're finally joining them there. And I think the charge is we can't try to bring back a status quo like it was on March 13th or whatever. It's got to be different.
I think it's becoming clearer and clearer that we can't go back to March 10th or March 13th. But in that context of change, I think there has been some, there's still some work that we have been, trying to grind through over the last quarter, right? As I think most of you know, Imagine MKE's main engine for how we get our work done and make progress towards this, the shared agenda in our four work groups and this broader vision of an inclusive, inspired, engaged 21st century Milwaukee powered by arts and culture. We have these work groups. And historically, as you know, in fact, right around now, we would probably be recording a podcast, getting people ready for the work group meetings that would be coming up.
The June
work group meetings that would be coming up. But I think we realized, coming out of, or, you know, in this moment of quarantine that we've been in for the last 2.5-3 months, that the way we've been convening our work groups, these quarterly work groups, may not be the most efficient or most effective way, or even the most possible way, right? Because we've been convening in person, and given the demands of the public health response to COVID-19, and also with regard to the speed at which we need to be nimble in the current context of the world, that we had to kind of make some on-the-fly changes as to how we convene in this new reality, and also addressing some of the continuing changes in the world, right? Whether it's COVID-19, whether it's these protests in response to the killings of Black men across the nation, right, including in Minneapolis and here, what would be the highest and best use of our organization, our four work groups, and more broadly, the network, right? And so, Mac, you want to talk a little bit about how the webinar that we held today for our steering committee, and then what the plan is moving forward, and how we might be able to get folks who are interested in making a powerful contribution to moving this agenda forward involved in the next 6 weeks or so?
Yep. So just want to do a reframe, because maybe some of you, the listener, are new to the world of Imagine MKE. We Imagine was formed on a collective impact model, right? And as David had said, right, that there is a shared agenda to make an inclusive and vibrant Milwaukee driven by arts and culture, right? And even though Imagine MKE, you know, even though that's our work in a way, our work is also really about holding that container so that others could join. Because as David said, this this, that thing can't belong to one person or one organization. It happens only if all of us, we harness, right, the gifts of many leaders and many levels from grassroots to grass tops across many sectors, right? Not just arts and culture. We're talking private sector. We're talking government. We're talking residents. We're talking faith, right? We're talking about all these different places. So, you know, in essence, right, we say this phrase, like, what will it take to get people to make contributions and role? And so our usual way has been having these quarterly work groups. And we did it, you know, I came aboard last October. So we did a round in September. We did a round in December and March. And we were planning to have one in June. So the premise is every quarter, right, we actually assemble folks in our four different groups, which is support for artists, neighborhood partnerships, which focuses on our targeted neighborhoods, Vamani and Metcalf Park. As well as two other topics, which is marketing and PR, which is creating the new narrative about arts and culture in Milwaukee, as well as public policy, right? How do we make policy more arts and culture centric, as well as how do we actually have artists, you know, on boards, you know, and leading, making decisions, right? And informing decision making. So that work's been going, it's continued to go, but as David said, we're going to shift a bit because we can't meet in person, and there are some other realities that are facing us right now, and how might we both continue the shared agenda, right, those four areas, and meet and bring people together to advance those four areas, but also perhaps address something in real time that is affecting us because of the pandemic, as well as the other, you know, failed civic systems, you know, that have failed Black people in Milwaukee, right? So these are things that are very real, and these are things happening. So how can we mobilize our network to do that? And so that's what this upcoming session is today. Today, what we have is called a steering committee. That means every group that I mentioned, these four work groups, has two leaders from the field that lead it, and they set the agenda, if you will, and they also work. And each group is partnered with a staffer. So David leads public policy, Lindsay's working on marketing, Antoine does neighborhood partnerships, and Kenita does the support for artists. So it's a partnership, right? You know, again, imagine our job is like the backbone. We're like the container. We're like the league, if to borrow a sports analogy. Like, we have the stadiums, right? We set out the schedules, if you will, but you still need players, right? And those are the leaders in our field, right? Our artists, our arts administrators, our residents, as well as leaders from organizations from, you know, you name it, in the city. So as well as companies. So this summer, we're going to actually convene a series by Zoom. Go figure. We're gonna have these Zoom webinars, but what will happen is they will be just themed on, again, by these different four themes we talked about, which are support for artists, marketing, PR, public policy, and neighborhood partnerships, and focused on doing a sort of advancing direct action within the next 2 to 3 weeks, you know, sort of soon after that session. This is based actually on, you know, a series we've rolled out earlier in response to COVID-19. We've done a task force meeting. And maybe, David, you could speak a little bit about that. But that's a bit of like the innovation in real time. We had a series of these meetings because we can only meet by Zoom, and addressing sort of the arts and cultural response to the pandemic, which have been pretty successful in doing action. And so we're actually continuing that format, if you will, but applying it to the work groups.
Yeah, I think, you know, for those who are who subscribe to the podcast, you guys have heard us talk on and off about the COVID-19 task force. For any new folks, it's been basically just a weekly, biweekly meeting that convenes folks who are interested in talking about whatever the issue is that is coming to the task force, and we're able to convene or design a meeting that helps move people from the beginning of the meeting, which might be a really heavy topic, such as the one last Thursday, which is about small arts organizations collaborating more effectively and with philanthropy in this time of COVID-19, and actually move people to action. And I think the outcome of last Thursday's meeting I thought was really, really exciting. You know, there were a lot of really interesting areas where people were interested in collaborating There were some really interesting recommendations very broadly to philanthropy about how philanthropy can support small arts organizations, particularly in this very like difficult moment for smaller arts organizations that may not be able to sell tickets or do their contracts because of the public health response to COVID-19. And, you know, I don't think I'm talking out of school, but, you know, some of the co-designers of the meeting with us followed up really quickly about like, hey, what's the next thing and how do we move it forward, which was so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, that's a sign of a good meeting when people are like, let's do it again, right? And what'll it take? And just to let folks know, right, like this series of meetings from COVID task force, we call them the COVID task force, you know, we've been averaging like, you know, 25 different leaders a session, right? Which has really been exciting because some of these are folks who've never been in the space with us, right? I've never worked on it before. So I look at it as just a great opportunity to introduce our method and style. And they're inspired because they're seeing action being, you know, action happening, right? And so, you know, another example of what happened this summer with the COVID-19 response is we got a letter signed by how many board chairs?
29.
29 board chairs signed a letter to elected reps about making sure arts and culture is going to be part of this recovery, as well as we got how many CEOs to sign up?
44.
Right? 44, yeah, to be one voice, which was also in the journal Sentinel, was also in the Biz Journal, right? This is the first time we've seen in a long time the arts and cultural groups talking in one voice, saying, make sure, you know, if arts got us through the pandemic, we make sure we take our arts and culture after the pandemic that's around. And so it's important.
If I may, Mac, just like 44 arts organizations from as big as the MSO to as small as an organization like Ex Fabula, right? Like on the same op-ed, saying the same thing, incredibly powerful.
Yeah. And again, it's really important so that message, right, gets in front of people and we start normalizing this notion that, hey, you don't do the arts for free, right? you invest in the arts. And I got to tell you, man, like the investment that our state has done at a public level, they have gotten a huge return on their investment. And it's about time they up it, right? And again, I know it's challenging, right? Times are challenging, but we want to make sure that arts and culture is heard from. And that's what we were put into play, right? To make sure that a lot of these orgs, man, again, ballet is going to ballet, right? MS, you know, symphony is going to symphony, right? Pink Umbrella is going to do their, you know, awesome programming to be inclusive, right? Everybody's got different things they're focusing on and they needed that group to be the voice, right? And to put them in concert, to borrow a pun, right? Or to play off an awful pun of like choruses and whatnot. And that's what we done. And we did it within 4 weeks, right? Boom, just like that. And so I think for a lot of folks are seeing this, like I'm excited about applying that same technology, right, to the work groups, because there's some really cool pieces of the agenda we want to advance, particularly for making sure that artists get more access to paid gigs and opportunities for resources to support them. As well, when we're thinking about public policy, God, this is a great opportunity now to really shape how to make sure that artists are seen as small business owners and entrepreneurs, right, and creatives. How do we you know, make the policy reflect that if we want a small business to happen, that's artists the same. Same thing with the marketing, the story about Milwaukee. I know that we're not going to have the DNC. I don't know if we're not, but I'm speaking here. I'm reading the tea leaves. We're right, not going to have the DNC as we hoped. We're not going to have the NBA finals here. So like, it's a bit of a missed opportunity for the world to see us, but that doesn't mean we don't start working on the narrative. And I tell you what, I don't think there's a better opportunity to reshape the narrative of how powerful arts and culture is when we see all these beautiful spaces that are going to be redone and welcoming as soon as people are able to get back together again, right? Because this is a city of festivals, a city of space, public shared spaces. And so to me, arts and culture is going to be part of that. So,
and if you want to sign on to the op-ed, you can go to imaginemke.org/ACT. Sign the letter.
That's right. And what's beautiful about it is you can also make sure that letter gets to your elected reps. Within the first day, we get about 50 folks use it. You know, they went to our website and they contacted, you know, Tammy Baldwin and all their different elected reps, Governor Evers. Make it easy for you. And they need to hear from us, right? They need to hear from people that the arts matter. So this is our little plug. We're excited about the work groups this summer and check out our website. We'll put the link in with, you know, if you're interested and you want to come out, we will have that posted by June 9th. So next Tuesday, we'll actually have the dates and the topics for those meetings. And we welcome everyone to come if you want to make a contribution, meaning if you want to put your time, talent, and treasure over the next couple of weeks to move something forward.
So, you know, last week when we had, when we basically launched our first advocacy campaign, right, we had the story in the Journal Sentinel where, you know, yours truly looked like Bayview's best realtor.
You look like Bayview's number one realtor. I can't believe that a story about how the arts is underfunded had you in a tan suit standing in front of a beautiful building.
No making fun at the tan suit.
Well, we needed a black and white photo and you looking grim and solemn, right? That's what we needed. But no, you were like, it was a sunny day. And you're like,
not going to wear a tan suit.
You're like, what do I have to do to get you into this Tesla? That was like the look on your face. it was a total shift. I was like, wait a minute, we're supposed to be sad.
So speaking of the total shift, right? So as of last week, right, we're sort of launching this campaign and it's coming together in a way that we could not have imagined, right? Like, yeah. Great article in Journal Sentinel. We had the back page in the Business Journal for the op-ed. We were in the Rebuilding America Memorial Day Wisconsin special in the Journal Sentinel. And I remember, Mac, I texted you, or I was like team chatting with you through our intranet, how like bummed, or how just like the feelings I had about like the that we had all of this communication and all of this action happening while the simmering response to the George Floyd murder in Minneapolis was happening. And I really felt, I don't know that I was exactly myself.
Was it a read the room moment? You're like, I got to read the room here. This is kind of rough.
Yeah. You know, like there's my stupid smiling face in that tan suit, right? And you know, here's the world is beginning to unravel even yeah. more than it has already. Right. And so, I think you gave me the right message to sort of buck me up, right? Which is basically, hey, we had to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, right? We ought to be able to do both things. You know, over the weekend, we worked on a statement that we put out earlier today about what had happened. And sort of imagine MKE's highest and best use in dismantling, or in playing its part, right, in dismantling institutional racism, right? Because in the same way that the vision of a inspired 21st century Milwaukee powered by the arts and culture is not something that one organization can do, similarly, changing the systems that have not been built to protect Black and Brown folks is not anything that one government, one business, one organization, one foundation can do by itself, right? So, you know, it's been a weird few days.
I saw that Sesame Street like put out a statement.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, Sesame Street's gonna put out a statement. Like, I'd like to think that we're all on the same page where Sesame Street stands on all this. I'm like, I was kind of like, yo, it's cool, Sesame Street. I get it, you know. And I guess I kind of lift that up because I think it is. On one hand, it's super fascinating that Nordstrom's sent me a note today, letting me know how that Nordstrom, Black Lives Matter.
Nordstrom sent you a note today?
Yeah, Nordstrom sent us an email about this, and it's like, okay,
you
like
I'll pay Nordstrom my credit enough card. That they send you a note, and you're busting my chops about wearing a tan suit.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, no, I'm just saying, like, I've never seen this before, that companies are like, you know, making these very interesting calls or being very pragmatic. Like, they don't want to be on the wrong side of history on this thing, right? And to the point where it almost feels weird, like, to your point, weird. Like, and I have to be honest, it's like, that was part of me going, like, I guess we have to put out a statement because we're out there. And there's a part of me that kind of wished, like, but I'd like to think we've been doing the work already. I'm not saying that exempts us, but it's my hope is, like, whatever we say, like matches our actions, right? And to me, our actions are like how we've partnered in Imani and Metcalf Park, right? To make sure that the residents there are making sure art and culture is happening in their neighborhoods on their terms, right? And I've seen it in our Artist Relief Fund where we prioritize Black, Indigenous artists. You know, I've seen it in our tables where we make sure that anybody, especially from the neighborhoods, especially from, you know, smaller independent groups and artists themselves, get to be heard alongside the bigs, right? So on some level, I feel like, yeah, we're doing it. My hope is that like whatever statement we put out there, you know, reflects that, you know, and I think it did. But that's just sort of the thing I've been going through. Like, gosh, we got to put out a statement. And like my fear is like, I don't want it to sound like corporate-y. You know, I'm like, I just don't, because I don't think that's not what we are, you know. And I know that's not what we are. I wouldn't work here if it was.
So you know, and yeah. So I think I have two thoughts about that, right? I think the one is I think you've intuited a deep or rather not so deep conversation that Lindsay and I had over the weekend about my natural voice when I do these sorts of things, right. And my natural sort of like, you know, my natural voice is like Mr. Corporate Guy, right? So like when I say stuff, it sort of comes off in that sort of tenor, and like tried to figure out how to tone that down a little bit. But I think, you know, at a deeper level, I agree with you. I think we have been doing a lot of the work and we have been showing up
and we're not perfect. Let's be clear. We're not perfect. We're working on it. And our team reminds us all the time, by the way,
yep,
that we can be better. So
absolutely.
We'll be clear about that.
But I think the work that we've been doing in the greater Imani neighborhood, I think is a testament to us living our values. And on the other hand, and I think it was important for us to make the statement just in you know, just in general. But I think, you know, if I'm being very honest, I think it was more important to me that our team saw us do it.
Yeah.
And right, that they could see that we are taking care of them.
Yeah.
You know, in the staff meeting, we had some folks tell us that they felt like no matter what they've been able to achieve in their professional lives, that they have not been able, that whatever they've been able to achieve in their professional lives, that it doesn't protect them in the outer world, right?
Yeah.
And for me, as the leader of this organization, to be able to make this statement to show them that we will protect them to the extent that we can,
yeah,
it was incredibly important to me.
Yeah. And that's why I'm glad we did it, to be honest. Like, that's why. And I thought it was authentic, right? And I thought it was what we are. And guess what? After you make the statement, you got to still do the work. You got to still do it, right?
You got to still do it.
It's not game over.
And you also got to like continue to get better at it, right? Like there's no, like you can't slack off, right? So
no, I mean, that's a good sign if we get complaints, because that means people expect better from us, right? And they want us to do well. So they want us to do right. And I think that's me, the opportunity of it. And I'll just, you know, hashtag real talk, you know, like for me, when I think about arts and culture, it's about like what Rosie Petrie's talking about, right? Like it's about accessibility and it's about inclusion and it's about the ability for people to tell their story, whatever medium they have, but they have a vision and they have a way to put that out there. And odds are the more marginalized those folk are, my assumption is we got to hear those folks more than ever now, because we need those voices to be included and a part of this. To me, what we're seeing now, the unrest is because we haven't heard those voices and they haven't been acknowledged and their pain hasn't been affirmed. And I think our role in arts and culture here and this work is making sure that they're included and affirmed. So, and that's not easy. That's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, like the city of Milwaukee, you know, our sector is also as problematic. And, you know, we'll just keep working on it. So, and the way we're working on it is figure out how more people can get involved, right? And make a powerful contribution and sit alongside the folks with lots of letters after their names or big, or have big buildings named after certain families in town. And, you know, that their voice matters alongside those voices, right?
That's kind of like the power of that op-ed, right? To be able to see these incredibly large organizations and powerful organizations alongside, you know, really small ones, sort of carrying the same message. I think that's part of that.
But I think like the largest challenge I think we have, and I know this is why people love listening to the pod, because they love to listen to us talk meta about everything. But it's this notion of like, I think from what I've learned in a year on this, and again, it's not unlike nonprofits and as a whole, right? It's just everyone is really like, it's Maslow's needs. I got to protect myself. I need shelter. You know, I need to actualize, right? But like that, when kind of like that Wellstone quote, right? When we all do better, we all do better. Right. And that means, you know, how do we, yes, we need to have powerful stages that the best perform, but we also need to have powerful stages where stories have never been told before and they're being performed by people who don't have all those letters after their name. And those places are sacred too. Right. And I think that's the challenge we hold, right? Is that like, you know, that stage isn't just performance, that stage is visual, that stage is written, you know, it's all these pieces, and that can be hard, especially when there's a perception of scarcity, yeah. Right? And there's fear, and people's livelihoods depend on it. I think more often than not, we have to figure out how to really show that we need to pull together, right? And that every stage matters, and every place, a performer or artist or culture, cultural practitioner, cultural artifact matters. So.
Yeah, you know, I've been spent a lot of time today kind of reflecting on that, right? This idea of like how the arts has all from the beginning of time, right, has been a tool for activism and change. And I think to your point, right, that like, you know, it doesn't matter. I think that the reason why that is because it's so the simple act of making something that cuts through the clutter, whether it's a story, a poem, a painting,
a TikTok,
whatever it might be.
Yeah, that, whatever it is.
It is the barrier for entry is incredibly low. And I think that's been the power of arts as an organizing and as an activism tool, right? It's always been the tip of the spear because it's a easy way to get a message across, to make injustices visible, to amplify the experiences of marginalized voices and to tell those stories. I think it's just, I think that this is an incredible moment to sort of figure out how these tools get deployed in this particular moment. And not only just in this moment, but how we actually like move the ball down the field, right? Because I think, you know, we weren't alive in the mid to late 60s, but I don't know how much, I mean, things have gotten better, but this feels also not great too, right? So like, how do we actually like take the promise of what happened in the 60s and actually take it across the finish line, or at least closer to the finish line in this moment that we're living in?
Well, I definitely think it'll be the artists and the creatives who offer that, right? Either through a possibility of a vision, or, you know, or by being able to integrate themselves in policy somehow. Because that's to me, art is just exquisite problem solving too, right? I think it's our charge to figure out how to make those connections, you know, and how to have them seen, you know. And this is you know, as heavy it is as it is, this could be the era that we look back, you know. Hopefully we look back years from now and we get to read about in textbooks of some really awesome things that happened, right? Or we're making stamps and Franklin Mint coins on some of the really cool things that our young people, you know, our young marginalized folk came up with, you know, and did. So,
you know, it's that thing about like, I find myself, I don't know about you, Mac, but I find myself swinging from like poles of like extreme hopefulness and extreme despair. And I'm a Libra, right? So
even you have that, okay, that thing here happening. We go.
But I think in the times when I'm most hopeful, and I shared this with the team earlier today, is that you know, we are in this moment where you know, the apple cart has been turned upside down, and it seems like there's just a ton of possibility, which suggests that, you know, we can have some interesting out of the box thinking, and hopefully some out of the box solutions where we don't go back to March 10th.
Yeah.
If there's any time where this can happen, and anything sort of big can happen, it is a time like right now when it seems like anything can actually happen.
Well, this is the sixth month of 2020. It feels like the sixth decade of 2020, but it's the sixth month.
Enough already with this 2020.
Enough already. But to your point, maybe we're going to crush this last 6 months, right? Maybe that's the opportunity, right? Like, you know, we've got a lot of room to make up. We'll see what story not only we can craft for ourselves, but our city can craft for itself. Because it's a lot's been laid bare in front of us, right? And it's just up to us collectively to go which path are we gonna move, and it's not gonna be the one we had before. So hey, that's the meta episode. That's the metaphysical episode of Imagine This Podcast.
It's totally fitting too. If you got to see the video, like Mac is like in his dining room with the lights off, only lit by the dim light of his computer screen. It's like we are in post-apocalyptic world.
I was going to say, like, my youngest is 12 years old and she's doing her schoolwork, which was like her looking at her phone. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm doing my homework. I'm like, it looks like you're watching YouTube. She's like, well, I am. What are you watching? And she's like, oh, I'm learning about the allegory of the cave. And then she spent the like next 20 minutes telling me about the allegory of the cave, like perfectly.
Wait, she wasn't learning about how Helen Keller read?
No, that's my other daughter who's a Helen Keller truther. And that's a side note. We'll pursue that another conversation. My youngest one, who's sweeter, much sweeter and nicer. I'm in the dark. I'm in the cave, the allegory of the cave. That's even our running bit. We'll talk about the shadows of the cave. She'll go, it's like, Dad, it's like the shadows. And I just love the fact that I can do riffs on Plato's Allegory of the Cave. Thank you, Sherwood School District, for being pretty cool like that for a sixth grader. I didn't touch that stuff until like high school. I'm like in sixth grade, she's talking about the Allegory of the Cave.
That's pretty advanced.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. Anyways, yes, that's I'm in the cave. And hopefully we won't record podcasts late at night, and we'll enjoy the sun.
Well, thank you for listening to another edition of the Imagine MKE pod. Be sure to rate us 5 stars, share a positive review, because God, it really helps people find us and this incredible, real-time content.
This reminds me of like when Cal Ripken, like, you know, in his series of becoming like the most consecutive games played, right? This feels like a game where like he had probably like a walk and maybe like got on base by an error. And you know,
and he also might have been sick too, right?
He also might have been sick. This feels like that. This wasn't like where he like went 3 home runs. This again, I'm not knocking the app. It's just kind of like we're just grinding it out, man. We're just trying to make sure like the world out there that we get through. But yes, email us.
It just happened around us, right? And you can tell us it by emailing us at podimaginemke.org.
Hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at imagine_mke or on Facebook at imagine_mke, and mention the pod on social media so we can make you a hashtag imaginary friend.
And finally, I put out a challenge on Twitter about the 3 Kubrick references that Wes Tank made in the episode.
Okay.
The first one that he said was Eyes Wide Shut. The second one was The Shining. The third one, nobody told us, but it's 2001.
So there you go. That shows you that nobody really listens to this pod with great detail or cares about film.
Maybe they haven't seen the works of Stanley Kubrick, at which point we have friends at Milwaukee Film to sit after you. So come back next week.
Please. We'll have guests, I promise.